This Is Your Life, episode 24. This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, I'm going to be talking about 7 steps to becoming the kind of happy person others want to be around. But first, this podcast is brought to you by Dynamic Communicators International, producers of the SCORE, Launch, and Platform conferences. These unique events are designed for professional speakers and those who simply want to communicate more professionally. They provide the tools you need to take your speaking and your speaking career to the next level. By the way, the next SCORE conference is scheduled for October 17 through 20 in Vail, Colorado at the beautiful Park Hyatt at Beaver Creek. We had the conference at this location last year. It was amazing, beautiful and amazing. It was an incredible conference in a gorgeous setting. I'm going to be there the whole week along with my partner, Ken Davis. And in addition to the formal instruction and the small group coaching, Ken and I'll just be hanging out. We'll be there to talk to you over the evening receptions, over breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We just want to hang out and get to know you. But this conference will sell out as it has the last 2 times. In fact, we just got a handful of tickets still left. So if you want to attend, you've got to take action now. My guess is that these tickets will not last another week. But 5 reasons to attend the conference. I thought about this morning as I was doing my show prep for this episode. Number 1, you'll learn how to make your preparation time more efficient, less stressful, and more fun. Number 2, you'll learn how to structure your speaking outline for maximum retention, both yours and your audience's, so that they really walk away with something to remember. Number 3, you'll learn how to find powerful illustrations and use them effectively. Number 4, you'll learn how to move an audience emotionally and inspire them to action, which is ultimately, at least for me as a speaker, what it's all about. And then number 5, you'll learn how to become a more focused, effective, and confident communicator. But for more information, go to scoreconference.com, and that's SCORE with 2 R's, scoreconference.com, and we'll give you all the information on the conference, and you can register there as well. So let's talk about happiness. Several months ago, my wife Gail and I attended a publishing industry mixer at a conference we were attending, and almost immediately I was cornered by this author who proceeded to complain to me about all the incompetent people in his life. I mean, it was this long, drawn-out litany. He grumbled about his literary agent. He grumbled about his booking agent and then his publisher, and no one, it seemed, measured up to his very high standards. And I was really uncomfortable with this. I tried to change the subject, but he persisted. And I finally had enough and excused myself. And I felt a little rude, but I honestly just didn't want to steep in his brew of negativity. It just was wearing on me. And as I thought about this, I realized just how destructive complaining about others is. My author friend didn't make me think less of the people he was talking about, but it made me think less of him. And that's usually the impact that complaining has, and we don't realize it. But complaining about others has the potential to hurt you in 4 specific ways. First, it trains your brain. I remember when I first bought a Lexus automobile. I never really noticed Lexus cars before, but suddenly they seemed to be everywhere. And this really demonstrates the principle that you see more of what you notice. And if you focus on people's faults, what you don't like, where they're coming up short, guess what? You're going to find even more faults. You are going to get more of what you notice. The second way that complaining hurts you is that it makes you miserable. My author friend, trust me, was not happy. His humor was biting. It was sarcastic. He seemed entitled and discontent. And his attitude was highly toxic, which is why I felt the need to get away from him. He was contagious and in a really bad way. Third way that complaining can hurt you is that people pull away. One of the consequences of complaining is that healthy people won't stand for it. They just don't want to be around you. They avoid you. And as a result, and listen to this, you miss scores of great opportunities, both social and business ones, because people don't want to be around you. Number four is that people don't trust you. This is probably the biggest negative, hurtful thing of all. As my friend was complaining about others, I began to wonder, what does he say about me when I'm not around? I then instinctively thought, I don't trust him. So four ways that complaining can hurt you. And after I left the presence of my negative friend, I happened to bump into another friend of mine who is an agent who is one of the most positive, consistently encouraging people I know, really one of my heroes. But he told me about all the great things that were happening in his life and business. And whenever he mentioned somebody else's name, he raved about them. He exuded gratitude. And I didn't really want to leave his presence. It was kind of like balm for my soul. I just enjoyed being with him because he was so encouraging, so positive, and his conversation and his personality were really magnetic. But my second friend was such a contrast to the first, and it made me realize these are two entirely different mindsets and approaches to life. And the good news is that if you're a negative person, you don't have to stay that way. Here are seven steps to reversing this pattern and becoming a happy person others trust and want to be around. Ready? Number one, become self-aware. Are you a negative person? Do you tend to see the glass half empty or half full? If you're in doubt, ask your spouse or a close friend for candid feedback. Negativity is costing you more than you can imagine. And frankly, it's like having bad breath or BO. Sometimes we just have it. We're not aware of it. And unless somebody that's close to us who sees us in a lot of different contexts share it with us, we might go on for the rest of our lives in that kind of negative pattern and wondering why we don't catch any breaks, why we don't have any friends, why people don't want to be around us, and why it seems to be happening for everybody else, but not for us. So the first step is to become more self-aware. Second step is to assess your needs. What need are you attempting to meet by complaining? Perhaps the need for connection. Maybe a need for significance, so people, you know, pity you or think you're really important and this shouldn't happen to such an important person. But are there better, more healthy ways to meet these same needs than by complaining? And I would just ask you, next time you catch yourself complaining, stop and ask, what need am I trying to meet by doing this? Third step, decide to change. Look, complaining is a habit. And like all bad habits, change begins when you own your behavior and you make a decision to change. It doesn't have to be a long, drawn-out process. It's going to take conscious effort at first, but it'll become automatic over time, and you can start today. So deciding to change is a huge milestone, and I believe it will transform your life and make it much, much more effective. Number four, shift your identity. Wow, this is powerful. Most powerful change happens when we modify our identity, and when I declared myself an athlete, I remember several years ago, daily exercise suddenly became easier because I wanted my behavior to conform to my identity. Well, what if you said to yourself, I'm a positive, encouraging person? How would your behavior change? How do positive, encouraging people act? Do they complain? No, they don't complain. You know, they get on with it. They see the best in the situation. They look for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. You know, they're looking for the silver lining in the cloud. I'm not saying they're Pollyanna, but I'll tell you what, there's something positive to learn from that movie as well. Number five, and this is the fifth way you can become a happy person that others trust and want to be around, is, and it sounds kind of cheesy, but greet others with a smile. According to health expert Ron Gutman, and I'm quoting, smiling can help reduce the level of stress-enhancing hormones like cortisol, adrenaline, and dopamine, and increase the level of mood-enhancing hormones like endorphins, end quote. While smiling has its impact on you, it also has a similar impact on others. I mean, think of the last time you bumped into somebody who had a big smile when they met you or when they greeted you. Did that make you want to be around that person? Of course it did, as opposed to somebody that felt, you know, that didn't smile at you, that frowned, and you felt somehow like, gosh, you were intruding on them or you weren't welcome. This is one of the major reasons people unconsciously want to be around you, is if you smile. Number six, catch them doing something right. That's right. The corollary to the principle, you see more of what you notice, is you get more of what you notice. If you catch people doing what is right and compliment them for it, Guess what happens? That's right. They start doing more of it. I'm not talking about manipulating people, but I'm talking about honest recognition, honest acknowledgement. It has a positive effect on the other person. And it's also contagious. Number seven, speak well of others. I'm not saying you shouldn't deal with bad behavior by confronting it. I'm saying you should deal directly with the people involved rather than complaining about it to those who are neither part of the problem nor part of the solution. Your mama's advice was right. If you don't have something positive to say, don't say anything at all. So seven steps, and while complaining about others may hurt them, ultimately it hurts you the worst. And by becoming more aware and more intentional, you become a person who others seek out and want to be around. So I got actually several questions as a result of me posting on Twitter about this topic. In fact, I had six questions. One of them I couldn't quite make out. The recording was bad, but five great questions. And the very first one comes from Alex.
Hey, Mike. I'm Alex Barker, calling from Lebanon, Virginia. My website is TooManyMeds.com. Your podcast has been instrumental in bringing me into blogdom, and I thank you for that. So my question is this. What are some practical ways you can encourage someone who is very negative about their own life and is very defensive at the same time when you suggest positive feedback, things to try and encourage them? Thank you, Mike, and I look forward to hearing what you have to say.
Well, great question. And honestly, we all have these kind of people in our lives. Oftentimes they're family members or people that we, you know, just can't change the association. We have to be related to them in some way. But I think the first step is just to recognize that there are some people you can't help. They're addicted to their problems. And for whatever reason, it's a strategy, probably unconscious, that they use for connecting and coping. But having said that, you don't really know until you try. So I would start by asking permission. For example, John, I have an observation that I would like to share with you, but my fear is that you're going to be defensive and not receive it. And I'm willing to risk that, but I want you to promise me you won't be defensive and that you will listen carefully and process what I'm saying before you respond. Are you willing to do that? So ask permission. And if they start getting defensive, I'd stop. You have to adopt the mindset that they need to hear this worse than you need to share it. And if they won't listen, no problem. You won't share it. Wait till they're ready. And that may be never. But some people just don't sprout ears. They don't get teachable. They don't lose their defensiveness until they have a major life crisis. And I wish this weren't the case, but it often is. So, you know, I learned a long time ago to not go around with a messianic complex thinking I can help everybody. Some people are just not ready. Some people are addicted to their problems and I can't help them. The next question comes from Dana. Take it away.
Hi, Michael. My name is Dana Byers. I'm calling from Edmond, Oklahoma. I blog at danabyers.com. And with regards to the issue of negativity, I'd love to hear your advice on what to do if you go into a situation where you're on a team, on a committee, maybe volunteering somewhere, and the people who are already there maybe receive new ideas with negativity. They might say things like, that won't work here, or we just don't do it that way. What advice do you have when you are faced with a situation like that, and how would you overcome it or work your way through it? Thanks a lot, Michael. I love the podcast and can't wait to hear what you have to say.
Thanks, Dana. I've been in that situation, unfortunately, many times, and it's frustrating. Sometimes you just have to bide your time and wait till you have more influence. I mean, you know, you can't always out of the gate have the kind of influence that you would like to be able to change a situation like that, especially when the peer pressure is kind of against you. But the more effective and successful you become, the more authority you'll have to speak and people will listen. But I would call it out beforehand, before I shared my idea. So let's just say that you're in a meeting and you're fearful that they're going to reject the idea or just kind of roll their eyes and say, you know, we just don't do it that way here or whatever. But I would call it out before I shared my idea. Maybe say something like, you know, I want to share an idea with you, but I've noticed a tendency on this committee to be negative and to be dismissive of new ideas. And so before I share this, I'd like to ask your commitment to be open and to think of the possibilities before you think of the obstacles. And believe me, I want to hear about the obstacles eventually, but not initially. Do I have your commitment? And then if they say no, or they're unwilling, fine. Again, you've got to take the mindset that they need to hear it worse than you need to share it. And if they're not going to be receptive, why waste your breath? You might also ask your group, and this is really a more of a long-term strategy, but something I found to be very effective. And that is, you might also ask your group to read a book called Six Thinking Hats. And I've got a link in the show notes to it. But it's basically a methodology for thinking as a group that gives the naysayers their opportunity to be negative and actually uses it for the benefit of the project. But, and here's the key thing, it doesn't allow them to stay there, because the hat that you wear, metaphorically, the black hat, when you begin to think of all the obstacles, is just one of six. And you can get on to the other hats that are incredibly resourceful and incredibly empowering. And this can actually help you make better, more sound decisions if you let it. But these people have to be channeled, and they have to see that there are a lot of different ways of thinking besides the one that they're probably just unconsciously out of habit or out of culture using. And so this is a longer term strategy. It works particularly well if you're the leader, but you'll find that your meetings are much more productive when everyone has the vocabulary of the six thinking hats and you use that in the various meetings that you're in. The next question comes from GD.
Hi, Michael. My name is GD Lonecker from the Surviving Divorce Podcast at survivingdivorcepodcast.com. I'm passionate about helping divorced people find the hope and healing they need after divorce. My question is that when dealing with a topic such as divorce, how can I avoid being drawn into all the negativity and remain positive and upbeat, but still empathetic to the needs of those I'm trying to help? I'd appreciate any input you might have. Thanks, Michael.
Well, this is probably why I wouldn't make a good counselor. I don't have a huge tolerance for this. But honestly, when people go through a major loss, they've got to process it. The Bible even says, rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep, Romans 12:15. But grieving and anger are both legitimate emotions. In fact, if people don't process these emotions, they're going to keep showing up in unhealthy ways. And sometimes this just takes time, and it's different for different people. It depends on their life experience, their constitution, whatever else they've experienced, their personality, their strengths, etc. Some people take longer than other people to get over it. But at some point, it's time to move on. The negativity is no longer healthy, and it keeps them stuck. Now, your job is, as a helper, is to discern when someone has slipped across the line from legitimate grieving to chronic negativity. And I wished I had a formula or an algorithm that you could use to process that, but it's going to take judgment. You're going to have to be listening empathetically, processing their emotions with them, and gently and graciously trying to move them on. But I would say the key thing is to be empathetic. Let people feel their pain. Let them process whatever it was that got them to where they are so that they can be done with it and get closure and pick up and move on to the next chapter of their life. But I would not try to jump past it too quickly, because it's necessary in the whole scheme of things. Lori has a similar question, a great question.
Hi, Michael. This is Lori Lara from El Dorado Hills, California. My blog is jumpingonclouds.com. Being in 6 years in recovery from major depression and PTSD, I used to feel really guilty about how bad I felt. So I'm very interested about what you have to say about becoming happy so that people want to be around you. So my question is, processing my pain and negativity was key to my recovery, and my current joy and freedom comes from being able to process that negative feeling. So how do you make the distinction between fake happiness that results from being in denial and true joy that comes from being able to be honest about the negative feelings and fears that we all feel, and yet appropriately being able to contain them so we don't spill over every part of our personality in our life? So I appreciate your input. Thanks so much for everything that you do. Bye-bye.
Lori, thank you so much for this question. It's really important. You've got to process your pain, your fears, et cetera. I am not suggesting that you just, you know, slap a coat of wet paint on a chronic problem and skip off into the sunset. I'm a big believer in counseling and getting professional help when you've got chronic depression or some other issue that you're wrestling with. And depression can be caused by a lot of different things, by a chemical imbalance, by a deep trauma. And I'm not talking about those situations. Having said that, I think a lot of people could experience more of the positive emotions they want to experience if they understood some of the things I shared earlier, and particularly some of the things I've shared in a post called Three Actions You Can Take Now to Shift Your Emotional State. And I've got a link in the show notes to that very important post. But look, happiness has a vocabulary. You know, just pay attention to the words you use. Our words are one of the ways that we shape the reality that we experience and give it meaning and give our experiences an interpretation. So happiness has a vocabulary. Happiness also has a physical posture. And I talk about this in the article, but you know, if you want to be depressed, that has a certain physical position, a certain physicality to it, but so does happiness. And I would just encourage you to read that article and then to begin to notice how you're carrying yourself and how that contributes to your emotional state. And then finally, happiness has a mental focus. You know, again, we're going to get more of what we focus on by more of what we notice. And if we're constantly rehearsing in our own mind the negative things that have happened to us, our negative life experiences, and particularly the meanings that we give to those experiences, that's going to shift our emotional state as well. And again, I'm not talking about these deep traumas or chemical imbalances where you really do need professional help to get a leg up and to begin to move toward emotional health. But I'm talking about the ordinary kinds of situations that most of us who are, most of the time, emotionally healthy experience just as we go through life and hit the ups and the downs that most people are going to experience. But sometimes these things feel forced or fake when we're trying to change, and that's normal. But they will feel more natural as we grow into them. And that's why I advocate things like smiling and nodding and sitting up straight and intentionally using words that are more the vocabulary of happiness, focusing on the positive. These things have an impact on our emotions, and they do feel a little awkward at first if you're not used to it. But suddenly, or at least over time, they become a way of life and can really impact how you generally feel about life. The final question comes from Mark.
Hi, Michael. My name is Mark Riggins, calling from Ventura, California. I blog at marksremarks.org. My question is, what are some practical ways you refer to a negative event in your past without getting bogged down in negativity? Look forward to hearing your thoughts. Thanks, Michael.
Like I said earlier, the questions were outstanding this time, and this is another good example, Mark. Look, when we take an event in our past, we have to realize that there's what happened, and then there's our interpretation or our story about what happened. And I think we've got to be careful to acknowledge the difference and distinguish the difference. So we've got to go ahead and acknowledge what happened. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, I went through a bankruptcy, or I went through a business failure, or I went through a divorce, whatever it may be. But then you have to take control of the narrative and choose how you interpret what happened. For example, back in the early 90s, I went through a colossal business failure. It was not pleasant. It was one of the most disruptive, one of the biggest, baddest, worst experiences of my life. And I mean, I essentially lost everything. In fact, we were so broke, we couldn't even go bankrupt, but we essentially did that. We just ran out of cash and had to shut down the business. And it was everything I'd invested in. It was my reputation. It was all of that. But I could have employed the victim narrative and emphasized all the ways in which others were to blame. And believe me, there were other people who were to blame. Our distributor essentially took over our business and did nothing with it, even though he'd made all these promises. And I could focus on that. And I could say one narrative would be that we were the victims or the victim of unscrupulous business practices or just sloth, and it wasn't our fault. That would be one narrative. Or, and this is the more empowering narrative, I could take the responsibility for that experience and emphasize my role in making it happen and what I learned from it. And even if I'm only 10% wrong and they were 90% wrong, it's hugely helpful to take control of the 10% and to own it. Because when you do that, you get the control back, you get freedom. And I'm going to tell you something, that whole experience was a huge education for me. I wouldn't want to go through it again in a million years, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. I learned more out of that experience that still serves me today than probably anything that I've gone through in the last 20 years. So you can see there, even Mark, as I'm talking about it, how I'm referring to this negative event in my past without getting bogged down in the negativity. You know, I don't believe things happen by accident. You know, it's just my belief. You don't have to share that belief. But I think that everything that comes into our life, even the really hard things, are intended for good, that they can shape us positively if we'll embrace them and remain teachable and purpose to use that almost like fertilizer to grow out of the experience. So again, I think you've got to distinguish, and this is where it starts, between what happened and your interpretation of what happened, and be conscious about the story you're telling yourself in particular, and the story you tell others as well. But the story you tell yourself is the most important story of all. So that's all the time we've got for questions. And I want to leave you with this question, and I would be grateful if you would respond on my blog to this question. It'll make for some great after-show conversation. But what can you do today to become a person that others want to be around? What can you do today to become a person others want to be around? So to comment on this episode, go to my blog at michaelhyatt.com/024, as in episode 24, michaelhyatt.com/024, and I'll do my best to answer any questions you have there, and I always review all the questions, and I really enjoy hearing from you. So one announcement: if you're ready to get serious about building your platform and taking your blogging to the next level, you can't do better than launching a self-hosted WordPress blog. And that's what nearly all professional bloggers use. That's what I use at michaelhyatt.com. And if you're a little technically challenged, if you suffer from technophobia and you've been afraid to try and install WordPress, I've got great news. Several weeks ago, I produced a free screencast called How to Set Up a Self-Hosted WordPress Blog in 20 Minutes or Less. This short video will take you through the process step by step. It's like me sitting down next to you at the computer and walking you through the process one click at a time. And trust me, anybody can do this. I've had hundreds of people do it, and a lot of them have written me back and said, thank you. I've been sitting on the fence waiting to get in the game, but this helped me do it. So you can find that screencast at michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup, WordPress setup, and there's a link in the show notes. Well, that's about it for this episode of This Is Your Life. I'd also be grateful if you would rate my podcast on iTunes. That helps tremendously with keeping my podcast visible so people who have never heard of it can discover it. And if you'd like to comment in this episode, please go to michaelhyatt.com, go to the show notes for this episode, and scroll down to the comment section. I would love to hear from you. Comment, question, whatever. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count.
This is your life. Are you who you wanna be?